Yeah, my sister-in-law Sharon said I should get on LinkedIn because, you know, I've been doing quite a few Zoom gigs and
LinkedIn is that thing. I had that once, and there's that thing you put your name on a list of people that you've worked with, and then they contact you for work and stuff, or you contact them for work.
It's like a corporate networking site, like Facebook, but for people in the corporate world, I'm led to
believe. And you keep on hearing from people that, because I got into it and then I couldn't get out of it. Because I kept on hearing from people that I didn't want to hear from saying, do you remember me? And I'm going, and then I had to reject them. And then I felt bad because I was rejecting them.
Yeah.
So then I just had to completely get off it. I was just going into a frenzy.
Yeah. Well, most people that contacted me are comics from Queensland and stuff and Perth, so who I know anyway. So they could have just hit me up on Facebook. I'm waiting for the head of BHP to say, oh, you come do a Zoom gig for us. But anyway, you register, you put your name, your address, and then you put your qualifications. And I've got an arts degree and a teaching diploma. I put that and a comedian, self-employed. And then it says, are you looking for work? I click, yeah, I'm looking for work. And then they bring up jobs for you. Like they've got jobs on there. Like
they make like recommendations of what you'd be good at given what you've put into the system.
And actual jobs, like the CES job board. So companies contact them and say, yeah, they've got actual jobs on there from companies. So you can look at it and go, I'm a personal assistant. There's 8 personal assistant jobs this week I could go for. So it's really good for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the first job they suggested for me was assistant restaurant manager. So not even the.
That's perfect for you.
Yeah, but not even the manager. I'm an assistant. And at Nando's.
Nando's, even better. How good's that? If he had nothing to do, we'll go and see Dave, you know. And he being the assistant manager, you can hang around out the back and you can make us like a fish burger or something and we could go out the back and eat it. That's fantastic. Hey, you should sign up for that job.
Yeah, right. So I can go out the back and have a smoke by the bin. No. I was telling one of my other friends, they said, imagine the manager would be like a 22-year-old in charge of you and lording it over you. I don't care who you say you are. Yeah, say you're a comedian. You're not anymore. You get that Perry Perry on. Let's do it.
Were there any other ones that they recommended you for?
Yeah, and also I'd look forward to the 16-year-old saying, my dad said you used to be a comedian. Anyway, what do you want? Second job suggested for me, Arabic-speaking customer support officer for Forex or someone. I don't speak Arabic. Yeah, I don't speak Arabic, by the way. But
well, I do. Everybody speaks Arabic. It's a given.
Do they?
Yeah.
That would be a complete disaster if I go, yeah, sure, and apply for it, and I turn up and I can't speak Arabic.
You can write in Arabic, but you can't speak in Arabic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. You don't have to write that down for me again.
Yeah.
I'd have to go in the toilet and get Google Translate. I'm not going too well. Yeah, I ring my parents. I'm not going too well in my new job. You might have to come pick me up at lunchtime. This is the third job suggested. This is more my speed. Warehouse assistant in Dandenong.
No, that's perfect. Dandenong, for those in other states, is it's an outer suburb, would say?
Yep. In the so-called Rust Belt, in the Industrial Belt. And yes.
You'd be in a warehouse. I can see you. I can see you in a warehouse.
Yeah, in a grey jacket. Just,
Maybe a pencil behind your ear.
Yeah, and stuff like.
Phil,
you can't put those boxes there, mate. No, I'd be the one putting the boxes because I'm the assistant.
Yeah, and you'd turn around and someone would have stuck, kicked me on your back or something.
I worked in a storeroom for a while, and it's not too bad. Lifting and, okay.
It's cold, though. It's cold. It's really cold. What you can do in a storeroom, you can build little places out the back where you can go and hide.
We used to do that. Yeah. We used to build them out of a couple of boxes and no one could find us out the back.
Yeah, get half an hour off going, your little cubby house.
Yeah. The last one was as a crew member for the Lakes Entrance Cruisers.
Lakes Entrance. Now, for those, again, who aren't from Victoria.
Beautiful.
It's sort of Lakes Entrance. Yeah. 2 hours out of Melbourne.
Gippsland. Yeah, towards
New
South
Wales.
3 hours
out of Melbourne. And it's lots of lakes and it's lots of holiday makers, lots of retired. Didn't you have a holiday house down that way?
No, Cape Patterson, which it would be halfway, 3 hours from there.
Oh, okay.
So, because Gippsland's so big, but it's towards the New South Wales border near Mallacoota, that kind of area.
Yeah.
And,
what was it? A cruise?
It's very, just a crew member. Just a crew member. General dog's body. The cabin boy. The not an able seaman, just a cabin boy. Just, you know. I'd have to leave my wife and family and just, sorry, kids, I'm off. I'm going to be a crew member on a ship now. You'll see me in 6 months' time. See you later. But anyway, LinkedIn so far has not been successful. I haven't got one gig from it.
Oh, well, stick at it and maybe sort of, you know, give me a bit more information and some other jobs will come through.
Yeah, maybe.
Did it say anything about maybe being a podcast presenter?
Didn't say anything about being a podcast presenter, no, not at all.
Well, okay.
I don't know if they're up with podcasting on LinkedIn. I don't know if that's in their, I mean, do they advertise voluntary work, you know, like.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but now's your time to shine because you're on one and I think I can hear the music coming.
Oh, yes.
Hello and welcome to Somehow Related. Now please welcome your hosts Glenn Robbins and Dave O'Neill.
Well, I'm cheering the music, Glenn. I've just had a look at the latest jobs they've put up to me for LinkedIn. And yeah. Test car washer.
Oh! Hang on a second. Just walk me through that.
What's a test car washer? What does that even mean?
I was at the car wash the other day. We had an incident. It was fantastic.
What happened?
Because what happened was I took Selena because she was a little bit nervous about going through the car wash. It's one of those automatic ones.
Yeah.
So we put the money in and it talks to you. It goes, move forward, through. And there was a guy already in the car wash. So we're waiting for the call to come through. She goes, I want to clean my wheels before I go in. So we move forward. And then she's cleaning her wheels, which then threw the whole system out because the machine didn't know where we were because we weren't in front of the thing and we weren't in the car wash. So it wasn't saying go in. So I rang the number and they've got cameras all over you. And I rang the guy, he goes, oh yeah, I can see you. And he just hits the button. And Selena then goes to drive in without me in. I'm running along next to the car trying to get in because I didn't want to, you know, because anyway, it was, you had to be there, I guess. Not a great car wash story, but on topic anyway. Okay.
It's amazing. You just, those guys are just watching you.
Well, I think I rang him and he goes, which car wash are you at?
Yeah. He's watching.
So he's probably sitting at home and like one guy is running probably six car washes just through. Okay. Surveillance cameras, and if the system breaks down, he pushes a button and reloads it. It's fantastic.
See, that's a job I could do, but I don't know about actually washing the cars. And this other one, a chess teacher in Canterbury.
A chess teacher.
Well, Canterbury, again, for people, it's a wealthy area in Melbourne.
I'm Dave.
I assume there's a lot of young little private school kids wanting to learn chess. So
I'm knock on the front door and come in and pop out the back and teach the young boy how to play chess.
I mean, I know the basics because my kids play it, but I get confused. I'd have to have Wikipedia on stand. What does the knight do? Oh, I think it goes diagonal. Or is it the bishop? Oh, I can't remember.
The knight goes 1-2-3-1 or 1-1-2-3. He goes in an L shape.
And then halfway I'd go, how about a bit of Uno, kids? What do you reckon? Bit of Monopoly. You ever play Monopoly?
In?
I'm 16. I don't want to colour in. You're my chess tutor. Yeah, I played the Russians back in 85, whatever. All right, we should get our topics.
Yeah, beautiful.
Where are our topics? They are Dave and LinkedIn. No.
The Heimlich Maneuver and Happy Days.
Wow.
Happy Days and the Heimlich. It's Heimlich, isn't it? Heimlich. Would that be German?
Heimlich? A German Jewish, I'd say. I don't know. I know Heimlich was an actual person, was a doctor or a surgeon who invented it. And Happy Days, I've got to say, was one of my favourite shows as a kid.
Well, it was the first show that I ever saw in colour. I remember it vividly. You're going around to a friend's place and he had a rank arena sitting in the corner and he knew why we came around. We didn't come around to play Uno. We came around to look at a colour television because we'd never seen one before.
Of course.
And he taunted us. He wouldn't turn it on. We go, mate, just get over there. And actually,
what was his name? I bet you can remember his name.
I think his name was Adrian.
Adrian.
Yeah. Adrians do things like that, don't they? Anyway...
And you did turn on eventually?
Well, you turned it on, but the old ones, they take a moment to warm up.
Yeah, they do.
And it kind of had to, you know, and then all of a sudden, it just went pop, and I heard Sunday, Monday, happy day.
Happy Tuesday, days.
Wednesday, happy day.
Happy days. What a day. Good day. Good night for you. It's a great song, actually. Great song.
It is a great song. We should maybe think about using that for Think Music. But it was magical because I've been watching Black and White, which is, you know, good. Don't get me wrong. But to see colour, you couldn't believe what you were seeing. You actually couldn't believe it, you know.
I remember, it's just funny, Alan Johnson was a kid in our primary school. I would have been grade six, I reckon, and he got colour. And a group of us went over to his house after school, and his dad actually said, "Sit back, boys, sit back." Like, it was radioactive. Sit back, sit back.
Are you ready? Are you strapped in? Okay. We're going warp factor four. Here we go.
I think we got one quite early because my dad on the weekends was a TV repairman, Kev. He was a...
hang on. So was that his job?
No. During the week, he was in the Air Force, but on Saturdays, he used to fix TVs.
So he just knew what he was doing. Oh, God, that's fantastic.
Yeah, he used to fix TVs. And one of the guys he worked, I think it was a guy who owned the... I was talking to Dad about this the other day, because someone put up an old photo of where we grew up on this Facebook group, and you can see the TV repair shop there. It's so funny. But I think the guy who worked there, or the guy on the business, committed suicide when colour TV came in.
Couldn't cope.
He just couldn't cope, or he wasn't ready for it, or
yeah,
you know, like the guy that had all the beta videos in his video shop. Oh, these are the ones they're gonna last. We don't get any of that VHS in. But yeah, he was there when I was born. He was at the TV. Mum had twins, and Kev was working in the. They had to ring the TV repair shop to get him to come to the hospital.
Oh, really? It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Happy days. So, what was that? It was Henry Winkler.
The Fonz, man.
The Fonz. He was dyslexic, you know. When he auditioned for that show,
yeah,
he didn't do the dialogue. They said, "Why didn't you do the words properly?" And he said, "I'm just doing the essence of the character." So he actually, he must have fudged his way through the whole series.
Yeah, right.
Or with all his acting. I mean, it must be hard for an actor who is dyslexic.
Oh, yeah.
How do you learn the lines when you're dyslexic? Oh, that's an interesting.
You have to get someone to read them out to you. These days there'd be an app that would read it for you, and then you stop it. But back in the 70s, there were no apps, as we know. He would have just got his partner or friend or someone to read it to him, I reckon. I mean, he was so good. I mean, the Fonz, he was the epitome of cool when we were kids, wasn't he?
It was meant to be Mickey Dolenz, wasn't it?
From the Monkees, yeah.
From the Monkees. He was the drummer, wasn't he, from the Monkees? He was the last member of the Monkees that kept on touring, I think. It was pretty sad. I think they toured out.
They toured Australia last year or the year before.
He was on the drums singing Daydream Believer and Long Way, Last Train to Clarksville. Pretty sad, really. Ron Howard?
Ron Howard was Richie Cunningham. But, you know, the Fonz, it was one of the first bit of stand-up that I remember. I can't remember who did it. And it blew my mind where he just talked about how the Fonz wasn't that cool because he was 30 years old and he hung around with school kids and his office was the toilet. Remember that? He'd go, "Come and talk to me in my office." And he lived above a garage at the Cunningham. So he was just like a sad... You know one of those guys that hung around high school when they had a job?
Yeah, I know. We had one of those guys that hang around the football club. And you're going, what do you actually do? You just hang around. You're going, a little bit sad. And Fonz, I reckon he was 5 foot nothing.
He was short,
He was short. He was probably wearing the high heels or something. But so he didn't really have the cutting figure of the tough guy, did he?
No, but he had the charm and stuff. And I mean, we all thought he was cool. There was no one cooler than Fonzie. Because put up against Richie Cunningham, Ralph Malph, and Potsy, they were so daggy, weren't they? They were so boy next door, the three. You know.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they were wholesome. But do you remember when the episode when Fonzie didn't have anywhere to go for Christmas? I cried. I remember crying. Do you remember that episode?
No.
Fonzie had nowhere to go, and I think I'm sure that he would have ended up at the Cunninghams.
Oh, you'd assume.
Mrs. Cunningham was. It was Mrs. Cunningham was gorgeous, wasn't she?
And yes.
And Mr. Cunningham, I don't know. It was Tom Bosley.
Yeah.
And they were just the quintessential American parents, weren't they? A wholesome family doing the right thing.
Yeah, we all wanted to be at the Cunninghams for Christmas. And he, And that's where we got Jumping the Shark from, when Fonzie jumped a pool of sharks in the car park at Al's on a motorbike.
Because this is one of those terms they use in the television industry, isn't it? And yeah. movie industry. And it's basically saying that when you run out of ideas, you'll do something ridiculous. Is that what it means?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So if, say, in a show that like Russell Coit, if you suddenly moved to the city and adopted a baby, or you know what I mean?
Right.
Something,
yep.
You yep. just go, well, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Jumping the Shark. Jumping the Shark happened quite... It wasn't like in the last 20 episodes. It still went on. It was still quite successful after Jumping the Shark.
But what did he do? Was he was skiing in a...
Water skiing is a different one. I'm sure he was on a motorbike and he just jumped a pool of sharks they had in the car park.
Oh, right. Okay.
There is that footage of him on the water skiing, though, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah, there is the water skiing one as well. But yeah. I think he was quite a good water skier or something. But anyway. And you know what else came from that show? Mork and Mindy was a spin-off, wasn't it? That was Robin Williams.
Laverne and Shirley. Laverne and Shirley.
Also. So that was, hang on, so Laverne and Shirley was, so there's two shows that came from there, yeah?
Oh, more. There was other ones. There was Joni Loves Chachi, which was, remember Chachi was, so Joni Cunningham was Richie's little sister.
Right.
And Chachi was Fonz's cousin, maybe. He was a little cool Italian kind of kid.
Right.
And they fell in love and then they got married, I think. They got married in
I could be wrong. I think they got married in the very last episode.
I think you're right. And that was a spin-off sitcom that wasn't that successful. But as we know, Mork and Mindy and Laverne and Shirley were huge. And Mork and Mindy, that was in Richie Cunningham would have a dream where an alien would appear.
Right.
And talk to him. And I read that the producer noticed that his kids, or one of the writers, the producers of Happy Days, noticed that his kids weren't watching Happy Days anymore. They were all watching Lost in Space and Star Trek and Star Wars and that kind of stuff. And he said, why don't you watch Happy Days? And they said, oh, there's no aliens. And so that's why he put Mork in, because to get aliens in the Happy Days.
That's when bang, we'll just write one in and appeal
to chuck an alien in.
It's that easy. But it was hugely successful. And, you know, and I dare say Robin Williams was going off script a lot of the time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know who else auditioned for that part? Richard Lewis from Curb Your Enthusiasm.
He would have been an interesting choice given that his neurosis. And Richard Lewis is in, I think most recent would have been Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. He's great in that. But he's a neurotic. He's had some issues, and I dare say he would have brought that to the screen. He would have been actually pretty funny being a tormented alien.
He'd be good if he played
it close to character.
It's not a bad thought. And also Happy Days had such a resonance with us, our generation. They did that live spectacular show where Tom Bosley came out to Australia, and he would do a live introduction to the show or something. He would come on stage at the... At
like a spectacular, was it, sort of thing?
Yeah, so because they were doing it in arenas and stuff, I suppose it's different from a play. It's more like a panto kind of.
Yeah.
And I remember, because I had a bit of an incident, because Craig McLaughlin played Fonzie.
Oh, hang on a second. Hang on. This is going to go bad. What happened?
Yeah, it's going to go bad. So what happened was that it must have been the mid-90s. I was on the Mick Molloy show anyway, whenever that was, late 90s maybe.
Yep.
And maybe 2000. I don't remember when the Mick Molloy show was. Anyway, it was a short-lived Channel 9 TV show.
Saturday Night Show. Quite notorious because he urinated on the set in the first episode. And I think, I don't think it went down well with the executives at Channel 9.
No, all the critics. Yeah. Which he was just acting. It was not real. He wasn't really weeing on the set. Anyway, so I said on that show... that, you know, they're bringing back Happy Days. And Craig McLaughlin said in the paper he was going to change Fonzie. He was going to make some changes to Fonzie. Yep. And I said, mate, you're Craig McLaughlin, you can't change Fonzie. You know, what are you going to do, take your shirt off? Because he was famous for taking his shirt off, you know, like...
Yeah.
He was in that band Check 1-2 and he had that song Mona. Anyway.
Not a bad song. I didn't mind Mona, I must admit.
Hey, Mona. Oh, Mona. Yeah, well, it's a cover of an old song. Anyway, whatever. You just do these jokes. You don't worry about them. The next week, I'm sitting in the makeup chair and Red Simons is next to me because he was doing Hey Hey in the same studios. He goes, hey, we had Craig McLaughlin on last week or whatever. Or just that, I don't know, we had him or we spoke to him. Yeah. And he's not happy with you. I said, what do you mean he's not happy with me? Well, you made those comments about him and Fonzie, and he wants to get you. Like, what?
And Craig McLaughlin is formidable. He's pretty fit.
Yeah. And I swear, I reckon it was 2 days later, I was in a cafe. I still remember where it was. It was in the Como Centre in South Yarra, Melbourne. There was a cafe down the bottom. I was sitting there with Kieran, and Craig McLaughlin walked in a singlet with two other guys. They looked like his bodyguards. And oh my God, I dropped the menu and went under the table. Like I actually crouched under the table. And Kira's going, what are you doing? I said, Craig McLaughlin's coming here.
I'm scared.
And she's like, so what? I said, well, you don't, I've got to go. So then
So what happened? Did he stay under there for the whole time, or did they leave, or what happened?
He got a table, and as soon as he sort of sat down, I snuck out.
You put the menu up next to your face and sort of ran out, did you?
I didn't do that. I sort of just put my head down because I didn't know whether Red was telling the truth or
well, or, Red is a little bit prone to stirring the pot, so to speak.
Yeah. But years later, I interviewed Craig McLaughlin on radio and I said, do you remember this incident? He goes, no, I don't remember that. Oh, I would have been fine with that. That would have been fine. Don't worry about that. And then he left the studio and Dicko, who's a good friend of his, goes, Nah, he was unhappy about that. I remember that. Imagine getting bashed by Craig McLaughlin.
Well, you know, it would have got you on the front cover. It would have, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I know Craig's in the courts and we wish him all the best, but you could have, you know, ended up in the courts, you know.
Yeah.
On a assault and battery, you know. But anyway, we wish Craig all the very best with his current situation.
Yeah, if he punched me, I probably wouldn't have pressed charges. I would have gone, fair enough, Craig. Yeah, if he didn't break any bones.
It's fine by me. What came first, American Graffiti or Happy Days?
I think American Graffiti maybe came. That was a George Lucas movie.
It feels like it's a spin-off, but I remember reading somewhere that American Graffiti came after. It was all around 75, and I remember 75 to 80, and I remember it when I used to go to 18th birthday parties around that time, they'd often play American Graffiti, which was a movie. Did it star anyone well known? I can't remember,
but it was a great movie. I remember that. It was just driving around in cars at the diner and stuff like that.
Remember thinking, why did we never have that in Australia where you could drive in and people would, like the waiters would come up on roller skates.
Yeah, so cool.
What a great idea for why can't we still, I mean, we can't do it now because of COVID, but you would think that would be a great thing to do, like a nostalgic thing, you know.
I think they tried it in some places. Yeah, but I don't think it worked.
Health and safety would be just probably all over the shop with it, you know.
Yeah.
Just, you know, you can imagine what would happen. I don't know anything else much about Happy Days.
Oh, you know, American Graffiti, Harrison Ford was in it. Of course, yes. A young Harrison Ford was in American Graffiti. Yes. And I keep saying it was George Lucas. It was George Lucas's.
It's an interesting one. George Lucas was Star Wars?
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a bit of a shift for you. The Heimlich Maneuver. Well, we're talking about this the other day because we're talking about doing it on babies. Because when you do it on babies, it's very different from how you do it on. When you do it on a baby, you put the baby over your knee and you punch them really hard in the middle of the back. And I guess the whole theory of the Heimlich maneuver is like air squeezing, so you're dislodging something in the windpipe, yeah?
Yeah. And it was like must have been the 70s because I remember my dad talking about it. And I remember Kate Langbrook told me a story once where she was at a restaurant with her parents and her mum or her dad was choking and a guy got up and did it.
Yeah.
Did the Heimlich maneuver on the mum or the dad and the food shot out, you know, the Heimlich maneuver.
So it actually worked. So it's interesting because it doesn't make you throw up. It makes you fire out whatever stuck in your throat. Because my mum, she swallowed a chicken bone and it got caught like way down across. And she was in hospital for 3 days
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they had to. Well, she said 3 days. It mightn't have been. But they had, obviously, it was because once it got lodged, there was no way it was going to come out. Because they had to go put her under and go and snip it and get it out. But just ponder this for a second. If you came up with something medical,
yeah,
would you call it by your surname. It's a little bit indulgent. It's a bit weird.
Well, it's like that great old joke about the guy goes to the doctor. I've got good news and I've got bad news. He goes, "Well, what's the bad news?" He goes, "You've got a disease I've never seen before. What's the good news?" What's going to be named after you?
Yeah, it's a good joke.
Like the Lou Gehrig disease, or
because Henry Heimlich turns up and goes, "Hey guys, what? I've invented a move to like when people are choking. Oh, what are you going to call it? The de-choker or the I don't want to call it that. No, I don't want to call it that. What are you going to call it? I might call it the Heimlich. What, after you? Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Well, I invented it. You know, so I want the credit anytime anyone gets fixed. But, I want them to say
what sort of credit is that? And also, I just wonder, how did he get it out there? How did he market it? Because it's not the sort of thing you can imagine him going on Tonight shows like Johnny Carson or whatever in America going, we've got Henry Heimlich, he's invented something, guys. What is it, a Frisbee or a Rubik's Cube? No, it's a maneuver if you're choking.
Huh. Well, what's interesting... is that it's because it's got crossover. You don't have to be a doctor to do it. Whereas it probably would have stayed in the medical world if it had been just only doctors can do the Heimlich maneuver. But because they were going, you need to do this. It's like heart massage. I wonder who the guy who invented heart massage, what do you call it?
Yes, yeah, CPR. CPR. Yeah, so CPR is called CPR because it's cardiac. Whatever, responsible.
But he didn't make a claim on it. He didn't go, you want to do the Johnson move? What's the Johnson move? Oh, it's where you do external heart massage and you get your heart going again. No, he just went with the, cardiac,
Yes.
Anyway.
I wonder if there is any other medical procedure that's named after someone. Like anesthetic is not named after someone. Oh, well, we've talked before about, products like Listerine was named after Dr. Lister, remember?
Oh, that's right, yes. That's
so
right.
They're pretty
learned
happy
that on this
with
show.
Them.
Yeah,
they're pretty happy doctors, aren't they? They're bloody naming things after themselves.
Is there anything that you do or have done that you would name an O'Neill manoeuvre?
Well,
you could claim it.
I'm pretty sure it comes to McDonald's. I didn't invent throwing the pickles on the ceiling. I'm pretty sure I didn't invent that.
Like
you're doing an O'Neill. But I reckon
how do you do that, by the way?
You just pick the pickle off the cheeseburger and you just flip it onto the ceiling like a flick.
When no one's looking. That's fantastic.
Then eventually it falls off and falls on someone. That's this is when we were 15, we used to do it. It was the joy of it. But I'm pretty sure we saw it in a movie. Sometimes you see this stuff in movies. But I may have invented the taking the bun off and putting the fries in the top of the bun, then putting the bun back on. That's an O'Neill move. You're doing an O'Neill move. Yeah.
That's a really good move. I didn't realize what I was doing. I didn't realize you were the first to do that. It's a whole myriad of things are going on because you're getting the whole thing in one place at one time.
Surely you've got a golf move, have you, that you've copyrighted? No?
No, do you know the famous story?
No,
the Optima 6. Optima 6 is a golf ball.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. No.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll tell this anyway. So we were playing golf one day, and I was out of the hole. And okay, I'm admitting this is really juvenile. I was out of the hole. They were on the green putting out. I went into the bushes, pulled my pants down, put a golf ball in the cheeks of my ass, and poked my ass out from the trees. And as they were walking towards me off the green, I turned around and said, "Has anyone seen an Optima 6?" And we all laughed.
Very funny.
So that's if you were to say to my golfing friends, what's the Optima 6 move? They would know exactly what you're talking about.
That's good. There you go.
Well, the weird part is I used to do stuff like that, and then I'd say, "Let's not tell anybody." Then I'd go a couple of weeks later. I go into the pro shop, and one of the assistants would say, "Have you found your Optima 6?"
Yeah, so they all knew.
Remember, word spreads pretty fast around the golf club.
Oh, of course. They're so bored. It's golf. Heimlich, could you do it? Do you reckon? Could you do the Heimlich maneuver on me? Do you reckon?
Well, I think I was talking to Slender about the other day. What you do is you come in from behind, you put your hands together, and it's a pull in and up.
Okay.
So it goes in, which it moves the air, and then and it pushes up. So it's like a popgun almost. So you're forcing the air upward, And you have to go really hard. And I think it's like not unlike CPR. If you break a rib, then it's all in. So you've got to keep on going until it pops out. But
yeah, right.
Maybe for thinking music, I'll do a Heimlich maneuver on you, and we'll see what happens.
No, we want to play the Happy Days theme song. Let's just do it now. I want to hear the Happy Days theme song.
You don't want the Heimlich maneuver on. So we'll do. How about we
do it on me now?
I'll do the Heimlich maneuver on you, yeah. And then that it'll be like it's before the credits of Happy Days. Okay.
Okay. Great.
You'll just be you. Okay. So how about you're in a restaurant.
I'm in a restaurant.
Or a cafe. Okay. You're in a cafe. And I'm sitting across from you, and you're there with someone, and I see that you're having trouble.
Okay.
So Sam, can you give us one of those
like Scooby Doo?
It's like Scooby Doo. So we're in a cafe, and let's see
action
and go
and action. Wow, it's great to be out of these COVID times in a cafe with you, my love. Don't tell my wife, by the way.
Bit of a joke.
I'm not actually interested. We're just professional friends. Anyway.
It's Dave O'Neill over there with another woman. I won't interrupt
you. So you want to talk to me about show business, yeah? Look, I'll just look at the menu. Focaccia? I don't think I'll have a focaccia. But what I've got is these flat balls. You should try one. It's like a coconut. I believe it's that guy over there. That's Glenn Robbins. It's his idea. It's a bit of an awkward story. Hey, Glenn, Dave. How are you?
Yeah, good. Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, I won't interrupt. Please enjoy the flat balls.
Do you know Linda?
Yep. Lovely to meet you. Yep. I'll just be over here drinking coffee. Need me?
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, try some. You're watching your weight. So am I, but I'm going to have... Oh, yum. All right. Yeah, well, I'll tell you my life story. Started comedy in 1990.
No, get on with it.
Yeah. Linda, I'm just starting to...
Uh-oh. David Tite is in trouble. Excuse me, darling.
Dave, you're right. I happen to know the Heimlich maneuver. I heard it on a podcast. I think I know how to do it. Just turn around. I'm just going to grab you from behind. One, two, three.
Oh, sorry, Linda. Can we get a serviette?
You got it right in the face, Dave.
That's terrible.
You okay, Linda?
Those flat balls are no good, Glenn. Anyone in this restaurant, I want you to know, flat balls, don't get them. They choke you.
Cue the music. Bring in Happy Dave. Save the day, Happy Days.
Monday, Happy Days. Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend comes, my cycle hums. I'm ready to race to you. These days are happy.
Yeah, what a great song.
Wow, that was like an episode of The Sopranos. Hey, how you doing? Not bad. You're with a girl.
I like that show before the Happy Days thing. That was a great show. That should be a series.
Oh God!
Anyway, what a great song, Happy Days.
Is a great song. It just automatically makes it feel good, doesn't it? Automatically.
Sitcoms songs used to tell the story of the show, like Gilligan's Island, Brady Bunch. Here's the story. Yep. Oh, lovely, you know what I mean?
Sunday,
whereas
Monday.
These days. I think the last one that did it was The Nanny, you know. She was working part-time, you know. Yeah. She's The Nanny. But we don't do that anymore. We should do that for shows. We should have a little, you know, for...
Do kids' cartoons do it or anything like that?
Yes, they still... But it seems now these days... Remember the opening titles or credits, whatever you call them, there used to be a bit of an event. You used to get excited, didn't you? But these days, they're so paranoid about people turning off. I mean, shows that you and I have worked on, they just cut straight to the... Well, actually, Russell Coit's got a good song at the start.
That's a good point. How's it go again?
Know.
I should know because I actually sang it.
I've driven all around the world.
That's it. Yeah.
Who wrote that song? Was it Tom and you or was it...
That was a friend of Tom's who wrote that, and it was me on vocals.
Was it the bloke from Kids in the Kitchen? Because he did the... No, I'm being serious. Craig, the bass player of Kids in the Kitchen, did the music for the panel.
Oh, did he?
Might have been him. Anyway, there's guys that do that kind of... that music.
But and it's amazing song. When you do it, because they take your voice and they put it through the machine. I'm telling you, anyone can sound good. They go, watch this. You see that note you just hit there? I'm going to make you sound really good. And they just push a button and it just goes, hits the note perfectly, because I was a bit off. And you go, I'm pretty good.
Auto-tune.
I reckon, I could probably release a single. You know.
And who was the first person ever to use auto-tune in a single? Cher in Do You Believe. She was apparently. I read that
bit of trivia. Do you? That's a good song too.
It was on Spicks and Specks a bit, but anyway.
Okay.
Should we have a think?
We have a think. I will have a crack. I'm going to say Tom Bosley was on set. They had the catering.
Oh.
He went down. He was choking, and someone and Fonzie or someone.
You'd expect Fonzie to do it.
Yes. And Fonzie, I'm not saying in the show, I'm saying in the real world.
Yeah.
That Henry Winkler saved Tom Bosley or something like that on the set of Happy Days. There you go.
I'm going to say we're talking about how they marketed this manoeuvre, how word got out about the Heimlich manoeuvre. I reckon Henry Heimlich came on as a guest. You know on sitcoms occasionally they do that, where they bring someone in from the real world?
This is so-and-so.
He's an astronaut. Yeah. Or, they have an astronaut or a doctor. Yeah. And he's going to show us how to do the Heimlich manoeuvre. You know, that kind of weird crossover that they would do.
It's just a contrived thing, yep. And so you reckon he came on?
Yeah. I reckon Henry Heimlich made an appearance on Happy Days, and that's how, because it was such a massive show, that's how the Heimlich manoeuvre started. I've convinced myself, and I'm right.
And Heimlich would have been going, if I hadn't named it after myself, I wouldn't be getting on Happy Days. So, suck it, you guys.
All right. What is the answer, Sam?
Anson Williams, a.k.a. Potsy on Happy Days, is second cousins with Mr. Homework, with Mr. Heimlich, with Mr. Heimlich, who invented the maneuver. Heimlich visited Williams on set and mentioned he was having trouble getting attention for a new maneuver he had created to save people who were choking. Williams invited Heimlich, Mr. Heimlich, to come along to the Merv Griffin show, where he was a guest later that day. During a commercial break, he convinced Merv to let Heimlich demonstrate the maneuver, and soon other shows invited him on, including Johnny Carson. Thanks to Potsy from Happy Days, the world knows about the Heimlich maneuver.
And that was sent in by a listener. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Somehow Related with Glenn Robbins and Dave O'Neill.
Wow. So hang on. So just again, I know Sam's just said that. So his name was Heimlich. So he shortened his name.
Yes.
So he's what was his name? What was his showbiz name?
Anson Williams.
Williams.
Anson Williams. You know how your real name's Glenn Robbins, Steinapocalypse. That's because you're a very famous Greek. But people don't know this about you. You're a Greek man.
Well, this is interesting. We don't come from an era, or do they still do it? Do people still change their name in showbiz? Because
occasionally.
Yeah, I know Jamoan. Is Jamoan McGowan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Eric Banner's Eric Banadonovich. He's shortened his name. Nick Giannopoulos is Nick Giannopoulos. George Columbaris is George Columbaris.
I'm sure if you were to Google people who changed their name, because it was back in the old movie days, they would just have a completely, complete new name. Wouldn't they? They changed the Christian
absolutely.
Name and the surname
who,
and just go,
was a really
look-
handsome guy who was an actor in and he looks like Mexican, and he was Mexican.
Mm.
You're like, well, I thought he, Sam, who was it? Who was a famous actor who changed his name? He was Mexican. It's like one of the greats.
According to Wikipedia, Manuel Antonio Rodolfo Quinn Oaxaca, known professionally as Anthony Quinn, was a Mexican-American actor, painter, writer and film director who achieved international renown.
He was a Greek. It's interesting because now they would be so proud of their heritage that they wouldn't change it. And they would maintain their name. In some ways, why would you deny your heritage? Do you think your people are an embarrassment to you? Why would you do that? And you'd be scorned, I reckon. nowadays.
Well, just Hollywood back then, maybe. And I just remember seeing him in something and going, gee, the makeup's really good. He does look Greek. Or then I googled him. I was amazed to find out that he was actually Mexican. I had no idea Anthony Quinn was Mexican.
Zorba
no
the Greek. If I was a rich man. Yeah. That was an LP that we had as kids, and we would put that on a Saturday morning, and Dad would waltz in singing Zorba the Greek with a tea towel around him.
I get it mixed up with Fiddler on the Roof, you know, like
Fiddler on the Roof. Maybe that is Fiddler. Oh, now you've got me confused. What's Fiddler on the Roof? Is that Fiddler on the Roof that I just sang? I can't remember.
If I were a rich man, yeah, I'm sure that's Fiddler on the Roof, isn't it?
So Zorba
Sam.
The Greek. Oh God, no, dear. I've
Sam, where?
Yes, it's Fiddler on the Roof. Definitely Fiddler on the Roof.
And Zorba the Greek is that Zorba the Greek? Tell me, it's a musical.
Zorba the Greek is a 1964 comedy drama film starring Anthony Quinn based on a book written in the 1940s. It also went on to be a Broadway musical after the film was released closer to the 1970s. The dance has been around since the time of Plato, about 400 BCE.
Here's a question for you. If you were a musical, they just said they made a musical out of Dave O'Neill's life, what would you call it? O'Neill? What would you call it? Would you call it?
I don't know.
Starring on Broadway, Dave the Musical. Dave the Musical would be all right.
Dave the Musical sounds good. I think in Zorba the Greek, he does that famous, he does the dance. Remember the Zorba dance?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the Zorba dance.
Which they've used in movies. They use it in Lock, Stock and Smoking Barrel. It's a great building song, that song that builds up, you know, the Zorba dance.
Because you, in your musical, you could do the fallback dance.
Yeah, it's my fallback dance where I just dance like a 10-year-old. Yeah. Look, I know people have suggested it before, but you should do a musical on your life, the Glenn Robbins story.
A musical on my life?
Yeah, where you play the lead role. Well, you come on, I was born in Strathmore, and then you do but then we just cut straight to the showbiz stuff, and then, you know, the chorus sings a song or whatever, you come out as Uncle Arthur, and everyone's, you know.
At some point, would I put a golf ball up my ass?
Yeah.
Critics, hail the golf ball moment of Glenn Robbins the musical.
Yeah, the golf ball gets its own dressing room, you know. I just love the golf ball. The golf ball, you know. Then you get jealous of the golf ball. Get that golf ball.